The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
So good morning. I'm wanting to welcome you to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania, but this morning, wherever you are, that's where we are. Wherever you are in your life journey, wherever you are in your spiritual journey, we welcome you. Whomever you love, whatever your gender or gender expression, we welcome you to this ever-growing circle of love and compassion and justice. We are a community that is dedicated to nurturing the spirit and transforming the world. This morning, I'm happy to introduce our guest speaker, who is Brent Bill. I know Brent from a time when we both worked for some sister organizations that were committed to resourcing and helping congregations and their leaders. Brent lives in Indiana, but through the miracle of technology, is able to join us here today. He's a writer, a photographer, a minister. He's written, about 22 dozen books. And I knew of Brent through his books prior to actually meeting him. And so glad that he's here. He likes to say that he's a bad Quaker. But what I want to say is he's so bad, he's good. So Brent, welcome to our fellowship this morning. So glad you could join us and give us our message this morning. Our opening words come from the Quaker writer and mystic Thomas Kelly. It actually wasn't until recently that I realized that he wrote these words while giving a series of lectures in Germany in 1938 during the Nazi period in Germany, during that Nazi reign in Germany. And so it added a certain kind of poignancy to the words as I reread them recently. He observed what could happen in a country when many people were living in fear and anxiety, also were living in uncertainty about their own material well-being and survival. It was a time when people couldn't trust what was true since the government had distorted facts and called it news. It was a time where the threats and fears led people away from trusting one another or trusting their faith in the rule of law. So it is into this context that Kelly spoke these words. There is an experience of the eternal breaking into time, which transforms all life into a miracle of faith and action. Unspeakable, profound, and full of glory as an inward experience, it is the root of concern for all creation, the true ground of social endeavor. This inward life and the outward concern are truly one whole, and where it possible, ought to be described simultaneously. He reminds us then with these words that the outer social world and the world of the soul are worthy of our deepest concerns, that it is in faith and in action that the eternal breaks into time. So may it be. Let us gather in our worship together as we have now pressed in light our chalice for us.
I will be lighting our chalice this morning with words from Barbara Stevens. Let this be a place of silence. Let this be a place of warm and gentle silence, the silence that soothes and comforts the wounded, the silence that yields insights into heart and soul, the silence that calms, the silence that listens, the silence that speaks, the silence that renews. Let this be a place of warm and gentle silence. And now I will light the peace lamp. You will repeat with me the second verse and with all the people of the world. May peace be with us and with
all the people of the world.
Our gathering song is entitled Circadian. It might be unfamiliar to some of us or many of us, but that's okay because we want to live on the edge of the unknown at every opportunity that we can, so we develop the strength of spirit and soul that we're all about. The words for this song will appear on the video, so join in when you feel ready and let's sing together this gathering song.
Fireflies are blinking, cannot seem to find their mates. The birds are flying south, cannot seem to find their way. They're blinded by the lights. The city's in the night, and they're
a beautiful, beautiful tune. I really enjoyed that. The focus of my conversation through story this morning is what I'm calling a sacred compass. So this afternoon, we are having what we're calling a grab and go from 3:30 to 4:30, where we ask you to do a drive-by to the congregation. And one person reminded me that the accent is on the word go, since we want to be safe and not linger around. So we want you to literally drive by the circle that we've created, and we'll give you a bag. And that's the grab part. We're distributing these bags that include supplies for our Christmas Eve candlelight service, a congregational directory so you can be intentional about being in touch with one another during the cold winter months that are coming, and also some packets for hot chocolate and cookies, but it's actually 11 days between now and Christmas Eve, so I'm not sure how long those rations will last. But if it's possible, you might enjoy some of those hot chocolate and cookies after our Christmas Eve service on the 24th. If you have some socks for the season or food for the food pantry, it's also a time to drop off those as well if you have the opportunity. So now going to the fellowship building today, some of you, I bet, haven't been to that building since we've been closed down as a precaution for this pandemic. Could I see your hands if you have not been to the building since we've closed down at all? Okay. So what you'll notice if you do happen to join us today is that the grounds have been maintained, fallen trees have been removed, wood chips are placed on the playground area. They're all waiting for us in the days when we can really enjoy that area again. And we've actually placed signs of kindness with various messages along Ridge Avenue to let people know of our values. Values such as you belong, your voice matters, love matters, and so forth. So now let's take a moment to review the directions to the fellowship. So in driving to the fellowship, this is the quiz, how many of you will be driving north to get to the fellowship? Raise your hand. Any people driving north? How many of you will be driving south? Raise your hands, okay. How many of you will be driving east or west? How many of you don't know which direction on a compass you'll be using, but you know you'll get there? Okay, great. So compasses are very helpful if we have a specific location that we're trying to get to. Compasses are very helpful if we know which direction we want to go. If we know we need to go north, then we just need some reassurance through the compass that we're heading in the right direction. So this leads me to my focus today on a sacred compass. Our guest speaker this morning, Brent, has written a book entitled Sacred Compass. So I started thinking about how a sacred compass is different than the typical compass that we just talked about. So we come to times in our life when we really are drawn to use what I'm calling a sacred compass. Think about a time in your life when you needed some inner direction about a question in your life or in your work or your relationships. Have you ever been in a place where you felt like you needed inner direction, but you weren't quite sure what that direction would turn out to be? So a sacred compass is so different than a typical compass. When we're inclined to use that inner compass, that sacred compass, seeking some inner direction, typically we don't know where we're going or where we will end up. We just know that we need to make some kind of shift. So when we turn to that inner direction, that inner sacred compass, we have to pay as much attention to our inner landscape as we do to the external events of our life. So I have found some of the magic of an inner compass, and I want to share that with you today. The magic of an inner compass is that it requires some inner qualities that allow us to truly listen to the inner direction, the places where we are being led. And I've created that sacred compass here on this board. So one of those qualities is S for stillness, really developing the capacity to quiet our anxieties and the preoccupations of our mind so that we're able to actually do some deeper listening. Another quality is W, willingness, a willingness to receive loving guidance, a readiness to enter into a period of discovering what wants to emerge, discovering where we feel led and directed in our life, really discovering what might want to happen through our careful listening. Another quality is A, attentiveness. This is when we pause and consider carefully who we are, what's calling to us, why it's calling to us, and engaging in an inner dialogue with ourselves, an inner dialogue with the spirit, a dialogue that we know with those that we know well, and who we know will listen well. And then all of this stillness and willingness and attentiveness won't mean anything unless we have R for responsiveness. Another quality, responsiveness, means to respond to what we've been attentive to, what we've learned about ourselves. And it really means oftentimes making a decision. Because we've been willing, because we've been attentive, because we've been still. And so the compass points of north, south, east, and west don't serve us when we're seeking some inner direction. We will need a sacred compass where in stillness and willingness and attentiveness and responsiveness, we find a new way. So I'm curious. I don't need you to show hands. Just do a little wink or a nod. I read eyelashes very well. How many of you feel a need for this kind of sacred compass right now in your life? Okay, I've seen a few eyelashes. Okay, great. So I hope that we can throw one of those sacred compasses in the grab and go back bag today just for you. So thank you. So now we will move to our meditation that Brent will do for us.
Well, good morning. It's wonderful to be with you all from Indiana. Poetry has always been very important in my life. To me, it very closely resembles prayer, and sometimes is the same as. A friend of mine who's a poet, which I am not, Mary Brown, once said, "Poetry is truly the only writing done to the glory of God." I always like to argue with her about that since I'm a prose writer. But she also added that she knew that that was true because poetry paid so poorly as a writer. And so, but I have long collected, if you see the bookshelves behind me, there are three shelves of poetry. And the first book that I bought that I was not required to buy for a class or whatever is a book of poems called The Risk of Birth. It's a series of poems about the life of Jesus, and starts with, of course, what we would call Advent kind of poems. And I wanted to share one of those with you today because it's long been my favorite of all poems that I have. And it's by the writer Madeline L'Engle, who I'm sure many of you know her writing. This book, back when I bought it, cost a whole $1.45. So it shows how old it is, and it's falling apart. But the poem I'd like to share with you and just reflect on for a moment is called The Risk of Birth. This is no time for a child to be born. With the earth betrayed by war and hate, and a comet slashing the sky to warn that time runs out and the sun burns late. That was no time for a child to be born in a land in the crushing grip of Rome. Honor and truth were trampled by scorn, yet here did the Savior make his home. When is the time for love to be born? The inn is full on the planet Earth, and by a comet the sky is torn, yet love still takes the risk of birth. That poem seems especially appropriate in this dangerous and scary time, both physically and politically. And what can we as people of faith offer to this world? Perhaps we can let our love take the risk of birth.
Thank you.
Good morning again, and thank you for this time to be with you all. It's a joy to be with Larry. As he said, we have had a long acquaintance, and I really appreciate this opportunity. It feels a bit odd to be speaking on silence, and yet I've been writing on silence for many years, and I want to say that I will be speaking out of with my faith language, and I hope if any of it doesn't resonate with you, that you'll be able to kind of do a reverse of the story in Acts of the apostles speaking in tongues so everybody could hear them. Maybe you could listen in tongues and translate whatever I say into something that will be helpful to you, because that's what I hope, is the words that I share will somehow be helpful. "Shut up," he explained. That's one of my favorite literary quotes. It's from an early 20th century novel by Ring Lardner. Besides being humorous, I find it's good advice for me. That's because I'm not very good at being quiet. People assume that because I am a lifelong Quaker, which not everybody is, that I must have some genetic bent to being quiet, since silence is a hallmark of Quaker worship and witness, as evidenced by the quotation that Larry read from Thomas Kelly. But frankly, I live in a world of sound. One of my professors in college called me a noisy Quaker. I like sound. When I built my house, which is a post and beam home out here on the prairie in Indiana, I wired it for music and movie dialogue. When I bought my latest car, of course, it came with AM, FM, satellite radio, CD player, and this woman who tells me when it's time to get my oil changed and other sorts of things. So there's sound all around me. Still, silence is central to Quaker faith and life. The principle that we hold is that we best hear the divine when our hearts and minds and mouths are still. Though few of the early Quakers read the mystic Meister Eckhart, they did learn the truth of his statement that there is nothing so much like God in all the universe as silence. So, if we'd like to encounter the divine, we must shut up, as the father in Lardner's novel explained to his daughter. Now, on the surface, that seems really hard to do. We're busy people. We are not cloistered religious folks. We're not in monasteries. We don't have time to go on silent retreats every other day. We aren't saints. Well, I'm not. I won't speak for you. But one of the gifts of the Quaker understanding of silence is that none of the above are required. Quaker silence, this idea of carrying stillness in our hearts as we move through life, it's been practiced for over 350 years by ordinary people with ordinary lives, just like you and just like me. Which is one reason I've stayed a Quaker. I need a faith that fits my daily life and calls me to my best selves. Central to Quaker belief is that faith and daily life are married. They're not separate things. They're intimate partners in the life of the Spirit. While each is important and valuable in its own, together they bring a depth of living experience of the divine to us and the world. Taking time for silence infuses us with spirit and power so that we can live faithfully in life's common ventures, youth, adulthood, marriage, singleness, work, family, illness, and death. Each of these share these in some degree with the rest of the people on this planet. They are the normal stuff of life, which is where we encounter the divine best, I believe. Silence helps us see and be fully present in them. An English Quaker, William Littleboy, once wrote, "God is above all the God of the normal. In the common facts and circumstances of life, he draws near to us quietly, teaches us in the routines of life's trifles, gently and unnoticed. Guidance comes to us through the channels of reason and judgment. We have been taught by God when we least suspected it. We have been guided, though the guiding hand rested upon us so lightly that we were unaware of its touch." That guiding hand resting lightly upon us is best felt when we're silent and still. That silence, caring stillness in our lives, is intimately related to our understanding that the divine is at work in the everyday, encountering us where we are. We open the prelude was by Carrie Newcomer, my friend who's also a Quaker, singer-songwriter, and her song is Holy as a Day is Spent. And if you missed that, I invite you to listen to it on YouTube at some time. Really reflects that God is the God of the daily and that the daily reveals the deity. We perceive this best in times of holy hushes, spiritual silences, silent Sabbaths throughout the day. They help us see God in a mustard seed and in leaven, in the autumn leaves, smiling faces. It leads us into a new way of seeing, a way of seeing the mostly invisible hand because we're so busy in all that we have been blessed with. Another Quaker, Rufus Jones, once wrote, "We find God when we enjoy beauty." And that's what spiritual silence does. It helps us to stop and sense the Creator presence present in everyday life. Perhaps that's why, I'm quoting a lot of old Quakers, but why William Penn said, "True silence is rest of the mind and is to the spirit what sleep is to the body, nourishment and refreshment." Silence is nourishment and refreshment. A Japanese Quaker, Tayoko Yamaguchi, says that noise around us can be turned to good once we practice soulful stillness in our hearts. She writes, "As I silence myself, I become more sensitive to the sounds around me, and I do not block them out. The songs of the birds, the rustle of the wind, children in the playground, the roar of an airplane, overhead are all taken into my inward worship. I think of myself like a tree planted by the rivers of life, sucking up God's gift of life and being restored. We need silence for times of reflection and renewal. We need times of quieting our hearts and our minds, listening for the voice of that which is beyond and within us at the same time. We need silent, stopping times. Now, I'm not implying that silence cures all our ills, spiritual or otherwise. After years of practicing silence, I am still impatient with other drivers. I still get anxious when my schedule doesn't go as I think it should. And without a glass of wine or two, I'm still fearful when flying on airplanes. Still, how much more mean-spirited, anxious, or fearful might be if I didn't practice interior silence? One of the joys is that spiritual silence, spiritual stillness is there for us anytime we want or need it. If I shut off NPR on my way to work, I find that silence is with me in the car, even as I'm surrounded by rushing traffic, the roaring boom, as Carey calls it in her song. As I relax in the shower after splitting wood here on the farm on an autumn day, I feel it in the spray around me. All I need to do is take it in. As I do, I find myself thinking more clearly and feel my spirit renewed. I feel tension easing from my mind and my muscles. Slowly, my life transforms. I feel tension easing. I feel a slight smile, or I figure out how to deal with that problem that's been bothering me. The only explanation for that transformation, subtle or dramatic, is that I took time to listen in the stillness. Silence, especially in life's busyness, leads us through the white water of life to gentle pools of stillness and calm. Daily stretches of silence is for saints, and it's for the rest of us too. So shut up, he explained.
Great. Thank you, Brent, for those words. We now take a time in our service that we call Matters of the Heart. This is a time when we reflect just a little longer on what we've heard in the service that speaks to us, and we allow ourselves to linger there just a little while longer. And if we choose to, we can share briefly a thought or a reflection that comes from what we've heard. It's also a time for us to reflect on whatever joys we might be experiencing in our own lives. And if we choose to share one of those joys with one another briefly, or a concern or a sorrow that we're holding. So let's take a moment during this musical interlude to reflect first within on something from the sermon, a gleaning from the sermon, a joy or a sorrow. And then we'll get instructions on how to share.
Thank you.
So I will say these closing words and then Preston will extinguish the chalice. These are the words from Thomas Kelly. There is an experience of the eternal breaking into time, which transforms all life into a miracle of faith and action. So with open hearts, let us embrace our life and the life of this world and bring both faith and action into play so that we make our impact inspired by the Spirit, inspired by love, and inspired by justice. So may it be. Preston will now extinguish our chalice. Okay.
And now we will extinguish our chalice. We extinguish the flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we gather again.
And our closing song is Teach Me to Stop and Listen. The lyrics will appear on the screen and join in when you can.
Teach me to stop and listen. Teach me to center down. Teach me the use of silence. Teach me where peace is found. Teach me to hear your calling. Teach me to search your word. Teach me to be directed. Silence will end so soon. Then when it's time for moving, grant it that I may bring to to be directed. Silence will end so soon.